All right, we have a big show this week. I know I say that every week, but this is an especially big one. Kelly and I were at Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch. There's a lot to talk about with that event, as well as our experiences there, and we also have some stuff to talk about regarding Shadows over Innistrad. If you are not aware, Kelly and I went to the Pro Tour in Atlanta this past weekend. It was Oath of the Gatewatch. It was modern. It was big. It was the first time that Kelly and I have both covered one live. We both traveled into Atlanta, we got press badges, and we covered the event for our insider subscribers so that they could know what was being played and what the cool breakout decks were. As it was, there were a couple pretty cool breakout decks, including the Death Shadow Monastery Swiftspear aggro deck, as well as various different flavors of Eldrazi. This was a pretty interesting Pro Tour to watch because it felt as if we were on the forefront of something historic. Maybe not historic in a good way. I think we'll talk about that a little bit. But it was an interesting experience. It was wild to see that as soon as the modern constructed rounds started going, there were a couple interesting storylines that we ended up being pulled toward following in different ways. For example, the Eldrazi. We were covering to see whether Infect was going to be able to beat it. We were looking at interesting other breakout decks. And also, we were talking with our insiders in the QS private chat room, and they were asking us to look for certain decks, like to see if Ad Nauseam was doing well, or whether there were any blue-white-red control decks. There were definitely a lot of interesting things to follow, and it was great having both Kelly and I there. Kelly, you have covered it in the past. You covered it solo for Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, and I wanted to ask you how this time was different.
Oh, I mean, it was totally different in every way. I mean, first of all, being able to cover it together was amazing. We could, you know, just having two people on the floor, we could do so much more. I mean, you were walking the tables while I was in the press room drafting up announcements, or vice versa, or we were tag teaming the floor, getting metagame snapshots. And I mean, I think that going forward, if at all possible, we'd like to keep both of us going to the Pro Tours. And I would like to hear from inside of how they found our coverage, how they liked it. Cause, you know, it costs some money to send two people to a Pro Tour, but it's totally money well spent because I think the coverage that came out of it is second to none. Now, as far as the event itself, Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar was standard, and BSD didn't really move the needle in the standard format all that much. We were looking at lots of Gideons and things like that, but the archetypes didn't really change all that much, whereas, my goodness, Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch was a modern Pro Tour and yet still dominated by Oath of the Gatewatch cards. And you said historic, maybe not in the best way, but I don't have the stats to back this up, and maybe a clever listener can help me here. But I'm pretty sure that in the history, a 20-year history of the Pro Tour, no expansion set has made its mark on a Pro Tour to the effect that Oath of the Gatewatch did. We put six Eldrazi decks in the top eight with OGW cards representing approximately half the deck list. And I don't know that that's really ever happened, that a new set has come out and thrust six copies of its deck into the top eight, let alone in a format where 50 editions are legal. It makes sense that, you know, at Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, we'd see a lot of BFZ cards in the top eight. And, you know, we did, but that's a format where, what, six editions were legal? I mean, almost 10 times as many sets are legal in Modern. These cards just came out, and they're promptly dominating the format. And there's been a lot of complaints about that, but I think those complaints are both valid and overblown at the same time. So we can get it dive into that whenever you're ready, because I have some strong opinions on it, and I know you do too.
Yeah, I would say maybe the Urza block was the only time when we've seen stuff so impact a Pro Tour like this. A Pro Tour Berlin had six Elf decks in the top eight. This had six Eldrazi decks. So it certainly, I think, has happened before, but this is in recent memory one of the few times when it's been this prominent and this significant. When we were looking around, I think people were wondering, if you weren't playing Eldrazi, you were playing a deck that you thought had a good match against it. I remember I spoke with Ari Lax, and he had been playing a Malira combo deck with Collected Company, and he had said that he felt that it was a pretty good deck. I think he said better than pretty good in Ari's opinion against it. But I think everybody there had to have a plan for it. I think if you figured out a good list, you were probably playing it. And if you or your team hadn't figured out an all-conquering amazing list, then you were probably playing something that could beat the publicly available lists at the time. Amid all of the discussion about the Eldrazi, which definitely sucked up all the air in the room over the weekend, there were some other interesting decks. The Death's Shadow deck that Martin Mueller and his Danish colleagues were playing was really fascinating. I think on camera at one point he or one of his teammates had gotten down to 12 or 11 life on turn one using Shocklands and Free Spells and Street Wraiths and things to play out Death's Shadow. And, you know, when you're willing to walk on the knife's edge, Death's Shadow can get really, really big. And I had seen times when the game would be an early Death's Shadow, like turn two, and then you'd attack with it, cast Become Immense, cast Teemer Battle Rage, and that was it. So that was a pretty interesting deck to watch. And Kelly, I know you had seen it dismantle an Eldrazi deck. Could you tell us more?
Yeah, I was Mueller's teammate, Emmanuel Gershenson, from TournamentCenter.eu, and he was playing against the blue-red Eldrazi deck, and the game I spectated, I actually wrote an article about this game, talking about how maybe the Eldrazi deck is unfair and something needs to be banned, but it's not going to get emergency banned, so let's talk about how to beat the Eldrazi deck. And so here's what Gershenson did. He knew what his opponent was playing. He knew the blue-red Eldrazi deck didn't have burn and didn't have good spot removal other than dismember. So he knew he could walk on that knife's edge and bring his life total down kind of arbitrarily low. So what I watched him do was, the most important thing that I can say is the way you beat the Eldrazi decks is you prevent them hitting critical mass. You don't let them get to a point where they can start going off. If they resolve their spells, they win. It's not like they can resolve their spells and you can just kill their creatures. Like, as soon as they start resolving creatures, you're dead. Like, mimics are fine, but the things that come after mimics kill you. Thought Knotseers and Reality Smashers and the like just demolish. So Gershenson started the game by double thought seizing his opponent and ripped all the good cards out of his hand. So now he couldn't just go off, which bought Gershenson some time to set up. So there are kind of four lessons that you need to pay attention to when trying to beat the Eldrazi deck, whether you're building to beat it or just playing against it. And again, I have an article coming out in a day or two that talks about this in much more detail. But lesson one, I'll just run through the four real quick. Lesson one is to play a deck that doesn't do fair things. Because the Eldrazi deck doesn't play fair. It's got lands that make 5 mana. You know, that's not a thing that you should be able to do in Magic. So the Death Shadow aggro deck doesn't do fair things. Check that box. Lesson two, that's the double Thoughtseize lesson. Remove the ability for your opponent to hit critical mass. Don't let them go off. Be proactive. And the fact that the two life lost from Thoughtseize is actually a bonus in the Death Shadow aggro deck is back to lesson one, which is do unfair things. Turn life into mana. You know, if you were around back during Urza's Saga block, you remember Yawgmoth's bargain decks where you could pay life to draw cards. Anytime you can use your life points as a resource, no good will come of that. No good has ever come of that. No good will ever come of that. So by thought-seizing away his opponent's best cards and using life as a resource to pump up his Death Shadow, he's already ahead of the game. Lesson three was the part where I said, you know, they don't play lightning bolts. They don't play spot removal. So he knew he could drop to an arbitrarily low life total. And in fact, what I watched him do was just that. He went, let's see, I counted 2 fetch lands, 2 shock lands, 2 thought seizes, and a Gitaxian probe. And I think about 4 points of combat damage. So he got himself down to 3 life with a Monastery Swift Spear and a Death Shadow on board. So that said, he also had Mutagenic Growth in hand and Become Immense. So he functionally killed his opponent from 20. I don't know what his opponent was at, but it didn't matter. He had even 20 on the board. So that said, the fourth lesson to beat the Eldrazi deck is to have a game plan that takes advantage of vulnerability. And as soon as you get an opening, take it. The Eldrazi deck doesn't really know how to block.
You know, so, and building off of that and tying it back to what Ari had told me about the Malira deck was he said, look, it has a fair, it has an unfair combo because they can't beat you with infinite life. They don't run Ulamog, so they're not going to be able to deck you. And the deck also can, he said, Kitchen Finks just blocks them forever because their only card with trample is Reality Smasher. So he said getting together Malira and Kitchen Finks or Anafenza and Kitchen Finks would allow you to block for just as long as you ever needed to. And then you could hit the combo. But, gosh, yeah. I don't know that we'll be using Eye of Ugin's come April, by the way. I think that it would be premature to say that Wizards should ban it immediately without giving the format time to see. But I also believe that there are going to be a whole lot of Eye of Ugin's cast in the next 3 months and not a lot else. So I guess my finance tip is get rid of your Eldrazi cards right now while you can. Well, I want to shift for a moment. We talked about what it was like to be on the floor. And we could probably, Kelly and I could just go on for days. It was amazing. Chaz, I wanted to ask you what it was like viewing from home, watching the storylines of these decks unfold in coverage.
It was a little different for me. Well, not so much different. Obviously, you two were there, and it was great. I was kind of really just facilitating all that information. I wrote up a day one recap, a preliminary day one considerations article, you know, just storylines and things going up on the morning of the Pro Tour. And it was something that I was noticing a lot in the MTGO league list and the Moto dailies that, you know, this Eldrazi list like kept showing up, and it changed definitely a lot since what we were seeing beforehand. I know we were seeing a little bit of Heartless Summoning, we were seeing all these little things, but I kept seeing like this core, all the rare Eldrazis from the Eldrazi rare level cards from Oath of the Gatewatch, always being that core, that nucleus of this new list. The Reality Shaper or Mattery Shaper, Reality Smasher, Eldrazi Mimic, those were always present, and it just seemed like Channel Fireball took that list and it exploded on the Pro Tour. I mean, we got all the numbers from Diego, he put out a great infographic. I took a lot of my information from there. It was just a lot of stuff going on. A lot of the storylines was we kept coming back to how insane this Eldrazi list was, and Ryan Overturf and myself did some coverage on Twitch, and we were just watching all the matches. And you know, every time the Eldrazi list was on camera, just insane stuff was happening, and we were talking about all the rare Eldrazis, you know, to caution for, you know, not to be in the regular versions of them, but the foil versions rather, would probably start increasing from just how dominating this deck was doing, on camera and just in the numbers. The advancement percentage was like at 81% or something crazy like that. And lo and behold, not too long after, all the foils were completely gone, and then all the normal copies started to go, especially cards like Eldrazi Mimic, Reality Smasher, Mattery Shaper, even Eldrazi Obligator, which was in that blue-red list, just started flying off the shelves. So it was really crazy. I really liked the Modern Pro Tour. I know a lot of people were really on the fence about it because they, you know, people just like standard, but people have to remember we wanted this event to be modern. We wanted a Modern Pro Tour somewhere in the schedule, and this is what we got. I don't know if this is what they were really hoping for, or I don't know if this was really something they foresaw, or maybe they did. I don't know, but I mean, the way Ian Duke was describing it on camera was a little awkward because, you know, they're talking about internal testing and internal future leagues and all that, and you know, how their deck lists look in comparison to what they're seeing today. And I just don't know how you can have such an oversight like that. I mean, you know, he kept touting that there's 50 sets in Modern, and sometimes these little interactions don't, you know, go unnoticed. But I'm like, you built an entire new block around Eldrazi. How do you not know? And you just reprinted Eldrazi Eye of Ugin in Modern Masters 2015. Like, how did you not, like, know something like this was going to happen. So that was a little interesting, but yeah, I try to stay level-headed and not have knee-jerk reactions to stuff like this, but I'd be really surprised if we saw Eye of Ugin specifically last that much longer. I just don't think you can have City of Traitors and Ancient Tomb in the same deck in Modern. I just don't know.
Can I hop in there for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's even worse than that. I've been saying this all weekend, but Eye of Ugin is a land that produces 4 or 5 mana. So the issue here is Eye of Ugin itself doesn't even tap for mana. It's simply a cost reducer. It reduces the cost of all colorless Eldrazi creature spells by 2 colorless mana. Sorry, by 2 generic mana. So on your first turn, if that's your first land, then you are casting 2 drop, like Eldrazi Mimic. You get 3 of them if you have them in your hand. So there's 6 mana. But in all likelihood, you're going to get 2 or 4 mana out of it on your first turn. Now, if you're playing the black version that runs Urborg, on your second turn, you can tap it and Urborg for 2 mana, and you can cast 2 3 drop on your second turn, or 1 4 drop. So, and in corner cases, you can use the Eye of Ugin to make 5 mana, and in really strange corner cases, 6 mana. I mean, the kinds of lands that make 4 mana are the kinds of lands like Scorched Ruins that make you sacrifice, like, 3 or 4 other lands, or like Lotus Vale, things like that. I mean, I don't care what the situation is, a land in Magic should never make more than 2 mana without, you know, eating other lands in the process. You shouldn't just be able to play a land and get 4 mana's worth of value out of it. Like, Eldrazi Temple's a fair card, because it just taps for 2. And you can only cast your creatures with it, and you can't start, like, going off and having crazy turns with it. But, I mean, Eye of Ugin it's the same thing that happened when they printed Punishing Fire, and people realized they could abuse it with Grove of the Burn Willows. It's like, when they made Grove of the Burn Willows, they weren't thinking, like, man, we can't print a card like Punishing Fire now. They made it, and they gave it no thought. Then they printed Punishing Fire, and they gave that no thought. And then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, we've got a real problem on our hands. So they banned Punishing Fire, because Grove is a completely reasonable card unto itself. Eye of Ugin was a very reasonable card when the only colorless Eldrazi creatures cost 6, 7, 8 mana, and they weren't particularly good. Eye of Ugin is a lot less fair with devoid cards that are inexpensive, colored but yet colorless, and in some cases just straight up cost 2 generic mana. So it's one of those situations where this card is not being used in even remotely in the way it was designed to be used. And then there's one more thing going for it, which is that if the game goes long, it's getting mercilessly abused. And if the game goes long, then all of a sudden you're just tutoring up your Reality Smashers and your Drowners and all of that stuff.
Right. And you make a great point, because that was never in question. I mean, Tron's been using Eye of Ugin for, like, ever. And that was never an issue. The card is not an issue. It's the fact that all of these new rare level Eldrazis from Oath of the Gatewatch that were pushed are being abused by this land. So I don't know I really don't know how you go about it. I mean, you're right. I mean, Kelly, when you think about
it in 3 months, it's got to go. There's no justification.
Yeah.
It's got to go.
Well, my thing is either you ban it or maybe you take out Eldrazi Mimic. Maybe you take out a couple of those.
No.
The only card that is unfair in that deck is Eye of Ugin.
You can keep Eldrazi. The deck is fine without Eldrazi. Without Eye of Ugin, the deck is still tier 1, I would venture to guess.
I think it would still be pretty good, yes.
Because, I mean, Eldrazi Temple is a very reasonable card in that deck, and if you've only got 4... Like, here's the thing. Eldrazi Temple is Ancient Tomb, Eye of Ugin is Mishra's Workshop. That's the difference.
I gotta jump in here, and I think Eldrazi Temple is the better one to get rid of, and I hear what you're saying, Kelly, that sometimes you get the bonanza plays with Eldrazi Mimics, but Temple on turn 1, Vizuva copying Temple on turn 2 still sets you up really, really well. And if you get rid of 4 Eye of Ugin, then I'm just going to put 4 Vizuva in my deck, and I'm going to go back to business as normal. It's still pretty potent.
That's not correct. Because you can draw a Vesuva without drawing a Eldrazi Temple, and the Vesuva isn't alive. But if you draw an Eye of Ugin in an Eldrazi Temple, or an Eye of Ugin, or sorry, if you draw an Eye of Ugin on its own, or a Temple on its own, you still get max value. So it's not quite the same. I see your point. I just wanted to jump in on that.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that you can play with three or four Eldrazi temples on the board and only one Eye of Ugin due to its legendary status. It's interesting, and I'll kind of put it in a less combative way to discuss this so our viewers don't automatically just close out the podcast, is that there's no Blood Moon. Blood Moon is the card everybody was complaining about in the format and how Twin was so good with it. There's no Twin. The fact that there is Eldrazi in the top eight is, I think, a different story than if there would have been Splinter Twin in the top eight if it were legal. It's certainly I think we would have seen different versions of Eldrazi in the top eight, I'll just say. I think you would have seen a lot more dismembers. Fact that, like, for example, the Chalice version with Simeon Spirit Guide, that definitely preys on a whole lot of aggro stuff, and a lot of the combos you're going to be looking at have got to be able to beat a Chalice for zero or for one.
And the blue-red list preys on all the other Eldrazi lists.
Yeah, and that's a list that would not exist if Splinter Twin were alive, but that's not to say that there wouldn't already be another deck, too.
Yeah, I tweeted this out, and I wasn't really trying to, like, I wasn't rhetorical. I actually wanted the answer. I didn't really get that much answers. Do you think Eldrazi, like, do you think that top eight would have existed if Twin was still around? Like, do you think, like, even if everyone showed up with Eldrazi, do you think Eldrazi would have been a 6 out of 8 of the top 8 finishes if Twin, not Bloom Titan, but definitely Twin was still around?
No, I think the matchup that the Eldrazi deck would have against Twin would be, I don't think it would be particularly one-sided. I think it would be a reasonable matchup. But there's no way we see 6 Eldrazi decks in the top 8. I mean, that's just, Twin would, a good pilot with Twin would steal enough games to at least crack the top eight. You're not going to see 6, but like you're not going to see
right.
The Eldrazi deck would still have thrived if Twin were legal.
Now is that because it's an interesting question, because is that, do people default to Twin more and they don't take the Eldrazi list? Like, how good of the player like on Twin would have been to take out all these high profile, you know, Hall of Famers and Channel Fireball players on this Eldrazi list? Like, I don't even know if Twin would have even had a very good matchup against Eldrazi straight up one for one. I mean, what do they do about that? They don't have anything to really do anything about turn one, you know, the nut draw, which wasn't even really a nut draw because it wasn't nuts at all, because it was normal at that point. It was like, you're going to get something turn one, like an endless one or something like that, or a mimic or something like that, a sky spawner or some, you know, mana reshaper turn two. And most of the times you got Reality Smasher turn three, turn four, pretty like on schedule. I mean, how does Twin interact with all those creatures just bumbling you already?
Yeah, it would be a 50-50 matchup in my estimation. I know that there are a couple decks that went 8-2 in the field or better, and this is where, if people are looking for good speculation targets over the next few months, you go and you look at the top 32 deck lists and you find the ones that aren't Eldrazi or Affinity, and there's where you look for good stuff. Certainly, like, Malira combo is one of the decks that can hang with it, in my estimation.
Death Shadow Zoo is definitely one of those decks, because it didn't make the top 8, but it's a pretty abusive.
Yeah, Jund is another deck, and I think the way you tweak Jund is that you end up running a couple more Damnations on the sideboard, or maybe you main deck a couple, because Tarmogoyf is still a huge brick wall against that deck. You know, you can scale up a giant endless one, but that's about it. Liliana of the Veil, unless somebody's got Drowner of Hope, Liliana just trashes it. So there's hope in the Jund deck. I think that people, I don't know, we weren't on pro teams, we didn't ask pros this, but I feel like everybody may have underestimated the amount of Eldrazi decks showing up.
This might just be a clear case of no one was prepared for this.
And I am I'm going to stand by my assertion that we're going to see some shakeups in April. I think R&D is more likely to ban one card and unban something than to ban both Eye and Temple. I think that they've shown a pattern of slowing down decks but not destroying them.
You guys were reporting all week that there was that the Reckless Bushwhacker like Zoo list. That's just as fast. Only the Eldrazi list is like a turn faster than that, where they're playing like all their stuff on turn three and playing a 5/5.
Eldrazi can also just run out a Chalice on turn one and then you're finished. You're never going to get anywhere.
Right. So, I mean, it's a weird deck. And I think one or the other should go. I don't think both.
But, I mean, who knows? Maybe people start playing. You know, I don't want to give it no I don't want to give Modern no chance to adapt. You know, like, I just feel like April might be too soon. Because, I mean, when you really think about it, you have the Modern Pro Tour, and then no one really cares because, you know, they saw, you know, these giant Eldrazi lists all over the place. But the next Pro Tour is Standard, so it's not going to be really fresh on everyone's mind again. And then it kind of doesn't make sense to ban it in April, but, you know, maybe one more cycle after that. Because if the meta really can't self-correct and it can't combat this deck, then there is something seriously wrong. Because this deck does do degenerate things, but it does get around certain things by, like you just said, Doug. I mean, they can run out Chalice and not even hurt themselves because all their cards are more converted mana cost than what they are in reality when they're getting played. No pun on Reality Smasher, but
yeah, we will see 3 Grand Prix in March, and yeah. R&D has said we're going to watch how these go, and we'll make decisions after that. There's a real question about whether the metagame can adapt to it. Certainly an inauspicious new wave of Modern when we thought that we were getting rid of the kind of turn 2 or turn 3 functional kill with Amulet Bloom.
I mean, technically it's not really even killing you on turn 2, which is kind of stupid, but it's basically killing you on turn 2. So I don't know if that factors into their turn 4 rule, but... I mean, oh, you're not really dead on turn 3. I just have, like, all this really overpowered stuff on the battlefield by now. Mm-hmm. Like, 2 Reality Smashers or whatever. So here you go. Deal with that. I don't know. But, yeah, I agree with you, Doug. I think after these GPs, I think that would be a really good indication on where they might place the ban hammer. Because, yeah, it just seems like... If all 3 of those GPs are overrun by this deck, yeah, it has to go. This is just, like, a clear oversight on their part.
And it is kind of a strange thing to say that R&D is happy when these things happen for an event, which is just kind of a... Like, Wizards is happy about that. They're on record saying that this makes for one cool event. But I think that's also kind of callow in some ways, because people traveled around the world to get to this Pro Tour. For some people, including people I know personally, it was their first Pro Tour. They were hoping to have a good time. And it's kind of like if you show up with a Standard deck and then you find out that the Pro Tour is Vintage. That's kind of what it was like. And it's like, oh, guys, isn't this cool? Isn't Magic awesome? You guys, like, 400 people came out here, and, like, 80 of them had an awesome weekend.
And you didn't.
Yeah, and you didn't. Thanks for contributing to a storyline of these other people being awesome. Like, congratulations.
You chose the wrong deck. Have a nice flight home.
Yeah, I
understand.
It's like if you score points and you don't get the ticket, you're looking at least $500 to travel out there. Your hotel room will cost you another $200 to $300, and then you got to eat and you got to find your way to and from the event site. So it's very well could, and that's not even to say getting cards for your deck. So it's kind of
done. Advocate
deaf.
Here for a minute.
Yeah, it's kind of tone deaf when I hear people when I hear them say, like, this was a cool event. We're cool to see these kinds of things happen once in a while. You were going to say,
thing,
Kelly?
Though, is yeah, every Magic player wants to be able to find the deck to break the format and win a Pro Tour with it. It's just that's just what we do as Magic players. We try to break metagames. The thing about being a pro Magic player, speaking as somebody who's of course never been one but spoken to many of them, is that you have nothing. You have one job, which is if the format is breakable, you break it. If the format isn't breakable, you figure out the pillars of the format, and you figure out where you want to be based on your hypotheses, your analyses of the format, the cards, and your gameplay styles and your strengths and weaknesses. But if a format's breakable, it is imperative that you ascertain that to be true, and then you snap it in half. So, because this format was breakable, I don't have a whole lot. I see a tweet from Gabe Nassif who goes, who else feels like dying because they didn't figure out the right way to build this deck? I'm like, you have one job. You're a professional Magic player. You have nothing but time on your hands to crack this metagame. Break it. Like, if you didn't come up with this deck, you didn't deserve to win the Pro Tour because the deck was there. And it makes for amazing spectating. It makes for amazing storylines. It's great to see the new cards getting some serious camera time in a deep format like Modern. And do I think that the deck should continue to be able to do what it does? No, I think Iavugan is not a card that should remain in the Modern format. I could be convinced that Eldrazi Temple should go also. But as far as, oh, you paid to be here, I feel bad that you didn't figure out how to break the format. I'm sorry, I don't feel bad for those guys. Like, work harder.
Well, guys, we also have some Shadows over Innistrad spoilers to talk about, and let's get to some of these. I know that we'll be talking about this kind of stuff a whole lot. This was an unplanned leak. Essentially, what had happened was that somebody from the Spanish company that prints up the Magic cards in Europe had gotten a pack out somehow and sold it on an eBay or a Craigslist-like site in the Netherlands, I think, or somewhere else. And
yeah, I think that's right.
Somebody bought it, they scanned all the cards, and they posted it. Wizards is not happy about this. They continue to remain unhappy about all these things. But I gotta say, like, you look at this, and I'm looking at the cards on Mythic Spoiler. They all look cool. And I didn't have this reaction about other spoilers before. Shadows over Innistrad looks like an awesome set. There's a lot of things that are Graveyard Matters cards. There are more flip cards. I'm happy to see that. Fiery Temper gets a reprint for some of you older players out there. That's pretty fun.
Yep, sure is.
The rare just puts four devil tokens into play, which are 1/1s, and when they die, they ping. So that, I feel like, was...
Dog.
Yeah, it's like probably pretty good in draft, but that's about it. It costs 6 mana, so it's not good. But on the other hand, like, if Wizards was going to have a pack spoiled... this is a pretty good pack to have spoiled because it gives people a taste of things, but you don't get to see, like, you don't get Kozilek spoiled. Let's just say that. Like, there's no rare or mythic that's like, oh, by the way, here's Nahiri, here's Emrakul. These guys are in, this is like the major story that we're revealing to you.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see things that count on the number of different types of cards in your graveyard. That means that if we see Modern playable ones, there are going to be cards like Rest in Peace and Relic that end up getting better.
That's actually a key word now. It's a Delirium.
Yes.
Just so for everyone that has not seen them.
And I like the look of the set. Certainly with Madness returning, this is no surprise to anybody, but Jace Vryn's Prodigy gets better.
Yep.
I don't think
it's something that we all feared, but here we are.
I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by Jace getting a little bit better.
Not only does Jace get better, but Liliana Heretical Healer gets better as well.
That's true. Because her plus ability can allow is a discard ability.
Yes.
So
and it's free. So
yeah, and it's a cool looking set. I know. I just keep repeating myself.
Feels like Innistrad. Like, if you just look at all these cards, it feels like a continuation of the original block. That if you look at, Battle for Zendikar, maybe it was just the overall art direction. I don't know what was going on, but Battle for Zendikar just, maybe it was a culmination of just the art direction, the kind of awkwardness of the, the identity of the set and, like, allies and these, these pretty horrible, ally-like mechanics and stuff, that it just didn't feel like Zendikar again. Like, it didn't feel like, oh, well, this was Zendikar back in X, and now it's basically just a continuance of that. This is almost like, when I'm looking at these cards, like the art, the direction, the mechanics, it almost just feels like this literally could have just, like, it's just a straight-up continuation of that block.
Yeah, like, this is the fourth set. It's awesome.
Right, exactly. Like, it could have literally came out like 3-4 years ago, with the original block, which is awesome.
Now, we also see Investigate, which is a keyword that puts a clue artifact token into play with pay 2 mana and sacrifice it to draw a card. We originally saw this kind of effect in Theros block with Guild, which put a gold token into play. I am pleased to see Wizards experimenting with the idea of artifact tokens that don't correspond really to a whole lot. So I'm going to be excited to see how we use clue tokens in ways that don't just involve sacrificing them to draw a card. I mean, they could certainly fuel other things, and I'm excited to see what Wizards has in store for this. It feels a whole lot like the Arkham Horror board game.
I was just about to say that.
Even more.
I was on the phone with a long-time friend of mine that's been playing the game for. I said,
I think Fantasy Flight Games should sue. I mean, literally, like, I'm like, Clue, Investigation, like, what's going on here?
I would not make
a Cthulhu card.
Mind if Shadows Over Innistrad is just Arkham Horror the card game.
It's a really good board game. So.
Yeah, they just announced the second set in this blog is called Eldritch Moon, which is, you know, it's pretty transparently like Eldritch.
I'm like, you might have a lawsuit on your hands.
So I got a question, and this is what's on everybody's mind, is in those leaks, we see a quote from Nahiri the Lithomancer, who is a planeswalker that's only been shown in the commander decks, but we know that she is the character in the storyline that created the Hedrons, and I believe she is a Core who are on Zendikar. And there's a quote that says something along the lines of, "You don't let me pull it up. As Zendikar has bled, so will Innistrad. As I have wept, so will Sorin." So Sorin, Innistrad is his home plane. He created Avacyn to protect it, et cetera, et cetera. And then the name of the next set being Eldritch Moon, like Eldritch Eldrazi, like, come on. Like, are we seeing the Eldrazi move to Innistrad? Is that what's going on here?
That's been the secret in the room, and that's what everybody's been debating.
I think that's pretty fair.
There's a good chance of combining the peanut butter and chocolate together on that one.
I don't think the first set, but I think it'll definitely be that second set.
Yeah, first set seems to be about like uncovering the clues and figuring out what's going on and why things are being cleared. Because like remember when Zendikar was having its early Eldrazi issues. You had things like the Royal, which is just like a chaotic force swirling around the world and screwing things up. And in the art for Eldritch Moon, it looks like things are just kind of going to hell. And, it's not like just mean devils trying to mess things up. It just looks like... I remember in the spoiler video for Shadows Over Innistrad, the sort of the end of the video with like the collar of Avacyn logo being warped and distorted. And, you know, that's what extraplanar horrors from the Blind Eternity seem to do. So I would venture to guess that there's no way we're not, that's not what we are about to see. I would wager money on it.
It makes sense because, I mean, you have Investigate, like, why is stuff transforming again? I thought, like, you know, the plane was purified and all that.
What's gone wrong now?
Right. Something kind of threw Innistrad back into... you know, the cursed, you know, transforming, you know, unnatural state again. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Well, this is a high-powered set just from what we've seen so far in the sense that Fiery Temper is a very good card.
Yes, it is.
You know, Lightning Bolts Wizards always makes you do a little bit more for, and even just casting it for three, it's still fine, but the Madness ability is great. I'm going to talk about Invasive Surgery a little bit. It's Envelope,
really,
but
card.
Also if you have Delirium, which is that graveyard types matter, the Tarmogoyf ability, it will remove every sorcery with the same name from that player's deck in hand. It's like it turns into Quash, which I've been wanting Envelope in Modern for a long time. It's awesome that we get just a totally upgraded Envelope. I see these cards. I see they're bringing back Deadweight. Deadweight was a very good removal spell at its time, too. These are things that indicate that Wizards wants to make a pretty good format. They want to push things to be more powerful. I like the look of this. I mean, we see a bad rare, we see a whole bunch of uncommons that are just for draft, but I like what I'm seeing.
The set looks great. Like I said, I think we all agree that it's going to generate a lot of hype. It looks and feels like Innistrad, like a continuation of the set. Whether we see high-powered cards, like the original block remains to be seen, but there's definitely some interesting stuff in here, and I mean... It's exactly like you said. Like, this was definitely the pack to spoil, if there was any pack out there. Because it gave us just enough information, but nothing too crazy.
Well, and I want to talk about spoilers for a moment, because Kelly and I did get a chance to speak to some of the Wizards employees who were at the Pro Tour over the weekend. Obviously, we can't name names, and we have to generally summarize, but... we can learn a little bit more about spoilers and leaks and things like that. So, first of all, this was not a planned leak. Wizards is just as upset about this as you think they are.
Pause for a second on that. Wizards does not do leaks. They made it very clear to us they don't do sneaky stuff like, ooh, we're going to accidentally let a pack hit the, you know, Dutch Craigslist and, you know, just kind of let that happen. They have a very, very strong idea of how they want this stuff to go. And they made it really clear, leaks steal their thunder, leaks mess up their plans, and leaks detract from the current set. Gatewatch has been out 3 weeks. Now people are ignoring Gatewatch because they're like, oh, this is a bunch of crappy good Eldrazi, you know, and now, oh, Shadows of Innistrad, let's get excited about that. And they were like, you know, we really prefer that people keep focusing on the set that literally just came out. And they're really unhappy about the fact that this got leaked. Like, it's awesome for us because we get to, you know, it gives us content fodder for months, but, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. Like, if you're somebody who has access to leaks, like, you're not necessarily doing everybody a favor by letting them out of the gate there. So,
yeah, just wanted to throw that out there. That's for sure.
Oh, you'll get smacked down hard.
And so the other thing is that this happened in Europe, and Europe has some pretty evolved and more stringent rules on intellectual property rights, and there might be lawsuits that come from this against the person who did it. So I'll put that out there. But the other thing I want to point out is that Wizards doesn't get caught twice. And the fact that the person we spoke to said, look, people think that we're idiots and that we just don't know what we're doing. But look, this is a huge organization and a whole lot of stuff goes on everywhere. And we learn from mistakes. And so I would say, look, we had the God Book release of New Phyrexia, and that has not happened since. There was the Judgment leak on Magic Online that didn't happen again. So there's a lot of things that have happened before that will not repeat as leaks. And Wizards is pretty good at making sure that they don't get fooled twice.
Yeah, this is definitely, it didn't seem like an official release, that's for sure. But yeah, so did you draw any kind of any more information out of them while you were there, or they were pretty tight-lipped about it?
About what?
You know, we didn't bring it.
Just Shadows in general?
Yeah, we didn't really want to bring up the leak because it's, I mean, like, we're there for the Pro Tour, and Kelly and I
right.
Wanted to be polite, and we didn't, I guess our journalist, the journalist in us would have just shoved a microphone into their face and said, what's going on? But, you know, everybody out there can predict what somebody's opinion at Wizards would be about this stuff, especially when it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were not, we didn't ask them anything about Shadows over Innistrad because we knew they weren't going to answer, and we respect the fact that they're pretty ticked about this leak, and they would much prefer that, we just kept our focus on Gatewatch, and that's what we did. You know, this weekend was Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch. The standout cards were from Oath of the Gatewatch, and you know, we kind of want to keep the focus on that. But you know, when we're talking to them, they're not going to tell us anything they're not supposed to tell us.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like we have a good time ahead of us, and it's not even that far away. I mean, it's literally like
it's
right
April.
Around the corner.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which
yeah,
means
literally right around the corner.
Yeah, we're going to start getting spoilers in earnest in a month. It's pretty wild.
Yeah,
this is just the new world.
We have another Pro Tour ahead of us to cover already. It's like we just stopped this one.
Absolutely. So yeah, for our insiders, Kelly and I will be covering Madrid. At least one of us will be there. Hopefully, the two of us can be there.
Kelly and I
will not be able to attend Sydney because it's the same weekend as Gen Con, and we have obligations there. But we may still be able to send a reporter to that. So we are attempting to cover all the Pro Tours of every year going forward because we got such a good feedback from our audience.
Yeah, that was, I mean, a lot of us were working hard. That's all I know is that we were working hard all weekend. I have another article just to be posted to the insiders just to wrap up the top eight and everything. I think Sheridan posted an article. So just in the meantime, read that because that was great. Go back and just read everything. You know, insider alerts were sent out. You know, we had pretty much information as you guys were giving it. Just all of us were really working hard. So I think it was really good success. And I don't know for everyone that listens to this, I know you guys made a big announcement too. So it really it was really a good weekend because that was a really good announcement. And you got a lot of just the site got so much interest from that alone.
You're talking about the ion scanner announcement?
Yeah, with the ion scanner. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and real quick, for anybody who did not hear the announcement, see the Facebook posts, Here's a short version. The last 6 months or so, we've been developing some pretty serious image recognition technology. You may have seen apps like this in the App Store on your Android or your iPhone. We've seen them all. We've tested them. We've talked to the developers. And from among the candidates, we picked the one that we love the best. We hired the guy, essentially, and we took it to, I would say we took it to at least the next level, if not beyond. It's a PC. It's a piece of Windows software. We do want to expand it into Mac OS X. I'm a Mac user, so no one is more disappointed than me, but frankly, all of the game stores that I've ever been to, their point of sale runs on Windows. So we went with what they'd use. We're going to have two versions. We have Ion Core and Ion Pro. That's Ion, I-O-N, all caps. And quite simply, you use any webcam and any Windows PC and point the webcam at your playmat, put some cards under it, and in about a tenth of a second, you know, about as long as it takes you to blink. So you put your card under the camera, any webcam will work, and in about a tenth of a second, it'll recognize the card, add it to a list, and if you have the Ion Core, it will push your list to Trader Tools when you're done scanning. If you have Ion Pro, it will link up with whatever your e-commerce software is to get that integrated with you. And, Doug, you said in the speed test you scan about 1,000 cards in an hour, which I'll tell you, I'm a fast typer and I know every card in the game, and I can't even remotely come close to that kind of speed. So the Ion Core will come with Quiet Speculation Insider at absolutely no additional cost ever. It's the simple version. It does one thing really well, which is take your Magic collection and turn it into a digital list of cards faster than I've literally ever seen anything do that before. We put a lot of resources and time and effort into this. It's what keeps me up at night and gets me up in the morning. We're really happy that we can hook insiders up with this without charging them anything extra. That's just kind of what we thought, you know, should we put it on an app store? Should we try to make some money? Nah, forget it. Let's just throw it in with Insider. Let's just keep hooking up our members because our members have been good to us. Last year was an interesting year for us. Some good, some bad, but we got a good loyal crew of members and we felt like, you know, let's reward them. Let's reward them for sticking around and, Let's really show them what we've been working on. So if you're a store owner, however, you are going to want to pay attention to Ion Pro. And if you are a store owner, you should email me, kelly@quietspeculation.com, and I will get you hooked up with the Ion Pro beta. The Pro does all kinds of fun things like filters out bulk, has sound notifications, syncs with your e-commerce software, updates prices as many times a day as you want, and pretty much we purpose-built it for your local game store and for your business to just kind of take over to that next level, take that half-million count bulk and unsorted cards in your back room and burn through it in a week. Just kind of make sure all your cards, you know what you own, you're not wasting labor hours cataloging and sorting. So Core will be available to QS Insiders in about a week. We're just polishing up some of the last integrations with Trader Tools and giving some things a test. Ion Pro is in closed beta. Like I said, shoot me an email if you'd like to get that working with your store or business. And we don't have a release date on it, but I will tell you a closed beta is it's basically a release candidate. We just want to get it into a few stores and put it through its paces before we call it good. So that was our big announcement during the Pro Tour. It wasn't as big as announcing the next set in Shadows of Innistrad block, but we think it's going to completely change the face of Magic buying and selling. So we're really excited to do it, and we're really hoping that everybody on the internet and everybody in real life fires it up, gives it a try, and lets us know what they think about it.
Absolutely. Well, we have talked about a lot today, including the Shadows over Innistrad cards. We talked a lot about the Pro Tour. I'm sure we're going to get echoes of both of those next week. And until then, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
Thank you for listening to QS Cast.